you very much. I feel very honored to have been invited to give a talk in this workshop, and I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me. I also would like to thank Fields Institute for its very warm hospitality, and I'm very excited to talk about, I would say, very recent work with Uffe Hårup on the EFROS-1 conjecture for bilinear forms on C-star algebras. And of course, it all started with Grothendieck's celebrated theorem from 1956. Given compact spaces K1 and K2 and a bounded bilinear form on C of K1 times C on K2 into either the reals or the complex, the theorem asserts that there exist probability measures mu1 and mu2 on K1 and K2 respectively, such that absolute value of u at fg is less than or equal than a constant, a universal constant, denoted by k sub g from Grothendieck, and it depends on the scalar field that we are considering, times the norm of u times, this is the L2 norm of F measured with respect to the probability measure mu1 times the L2 norm of G measured with respect to the probability measure mu2 for all F in continuous on K1 and G continuous on K2. So I want to say something about the Grothendieck constant, K sub G. As I said, it depends on the scalar field, so it's different in the case when you work with the reals. Respectively, you work with the complex numbers. And in either cases, the exact value is still not known. Here are the best known estimates for the two constants. So in the real case, it's greater or equal than pi over half. This estimate is due to Grothendieck himself. It's less than or equal to this number here. This, the right-hand side estimate is due to Krivin, who also claims that this is best possible. And in the case of the scalar field being the complex numbers, then the constant is greater or equal than 4 over pi. This estimate is due to Grothendieck himself again, and it's less than this number here. The right-hand side estimate is due to Uffe Hårup. So Grothendieck's theorem, ever since its appearance, has had a huge number of applications and considerable influence over the development of Banach space theory to begin with. I'm going just to give an example of an application of Grothendieck's theorem. So if you have P, a bounded linear operator from C of K1 into C of K2 dual, K1 and K2 are compact spaces, just like before. If you apply Grothendieck's theorem to the bilinear form defined in the following way, u of fg is, I'm going to use this bracket to denote duality bracket between C of K2 and its dual. So F in C of K1 and G in continuous on K2. So using Grothendieck's theorem on this bilinear form, it follows that this bounded linear operator T factors through a Hilbert space, and the Hilbert space that we are talking about here will be L2 on K1. And moreover, this estimate for the norms of the two operators R and S that appear in this way is there. And I just wanted to mention as an interesting application, for example, of this result, one can show that the Fourier transform from L1 of R into C0 of R is not on 2, because if it were, we know that the Fourier transform is a bounded linear operator, we know is 1 to 1, so therefore it will be invertible. If you look at it, it's inverse, it goes from C0 of R into L1 of R, this is a dual of a C of K space, so that would imply the inverse Fourier transform factors through a Hilbert space, which actually implies that L1 of R is isomorphic to a Hilbert space, which cannot be. So this is a nice, perhaps a surprising, unexpected, I don't know how to call it, application of Grothendieck's theorem. Okay, and the resume. Grothendieck's paper from 1956 ended with a list of six open problems. The fourth problem on the list was the sister algebraic version of Grothendieck's theorem. It was conjectured by Grothendieck himself, and this is the form. So in the non-commutative setting, the place of probability measures on compact spaces is taken by states on sister algebras, and the modulus of, say, a complex or a real number over there, it's replaced in Grothendieck's formulation by this expression. So this is Grothendieck's conjecture. It was proved in 1978 by Gilles Pisier under some approximability assumptions, and in full generality by Uffe Harup in 1985. Here is the statement as appears in Harup's work. So if A and B are sister algebras and U from A times B into C is a bounded bilinear form, then there exists two states, F1 and F2 on A, and other two states, G1 and G2 on B, such that this inequality holds. And as a corollary, it turns out that any bounded linear operator from a sister algebra into the dual of another sister algebra factors through a Hilbert space with an estimate for the norm of the operators R and S that appear in this way as follows: norm S times norm R times norm S less than or equal to 2 times norm P. Maybe I will just move this slide over here. Now, before stating the main result of this talk, I need a few things about background. So let's consider A and B, the sister algebras. Then, as Uffe mentioned this morning in his talk, A is an operator space with the norms on the n-by-n matrices over A simply given by the sister norms. And the dual of B, B being a sister algebra, has operator space structure given by the isometric identification of the n-by-n matrices over the dual of B as completely bounded maps between B and the n-by-n matrices with scalar entries. Now, if U from A times B is a complex-valued bounded bilinear form, then one can construct a bounded linear operator, U tilde, associated to it. This goes from A into the dual of B, simply defining it as in the following way: U of AB is the duality bracket between B and B star of U tilde of A, comma B for all A in A and B in B. So this gives rise to a unique bounded linear operator satisfying this way, U tilde. And the bilinear form, the original one, U, it's called jointly completely bounded. And for short, this will be referred to as JCB often. If this operator U tilde from A into B star is completely bounded, as an operator between two operator spaces, there is this notion of completely boundedness that Uffe talked about it this morning, in which case we say that the jointly completely bounded norm, JCB norm of U, the original bounded bilinear form, is by definition the CB norm of this map U tilde. Here are a few facts about the JCB norm of a bounded bilinear form. It is easily checked that you can express this UJCB norm as the supremum of norms of UN, where U sub N for every N is a map on the tensor product MN of A tensor MN of B into tensor product of N by N matrices over C with N by N matrices over C, defined in this way. So for a linear combination of elements of matrices, if you wish, so Ci and Dj's are n by n matrices, but with coefficients from A, respectively from B, then un on such sums, it's the sum of U of Ai Dj times Ci tensor Dj. And it also can be shown that one can do more than just that. So if one can replace the n-by-n matrices over C with arbitrary sister algebras, C and D, and one has this inequality where on the left-hand side you have the mean tensor product of the sister algebras C and D, and on the right-hand side you have mean tensor product of A with C, respectively mean tensor product of B with D. For a reference on this I refer to the paper of PCN Schlachtenko, Inventiones 2002. This paper will appear very often in my talk, so I'll have a chance to tell you a lot more about their remarkable work. So now I am in the position of stating the conjecture of Efros and Rouen from 1991. It is the following. If A and B are sister algebras and U on A times B into the complex numbers is a jointly completely bounded bilinear form, then they claim there exist states F1 and F2 on A and states G1 and G2 on B such that for all A in A and B in B, this inequality here holds where K is a universal constant and here you have the JCB norm of U. So I want to put in parallel Grothendieck's inequality for sister algebras and maybe comment on something in there, mainly. So here is the statement of Grothendieck's inequality for bilinear, bilinear forms, simply bilinear forms on sister algebras. And here it's the statement about jointly completely bounded bilinear forms on sister algebras. So the point is, if you look at this expression in here and expand out and multiply these two products, you will see that you get four terms out of it. So you get F1 on A star times G1 on B star B. That's already in here with square roots. Plus F2 on A star A times G2 B star B with square roots, and that's this term in here. And then you also get two cross terms. That's F1 on A star times G2 on B B star, and respectively this times this. So what the FS1 conjecture is saying is that these terms may be not taken into account somehow, are not relevant. Now, about the conjecture of Efros and Rouen, in the Inventiones paper of Pizzi and Schlachtenko that I mentioned already, they proved a version of Efros and Rouen conjecture for operator spaces and more. So let me read the statement. The first one is the following. If E and F are exact operator spaces sitting in sister algebras A and B, and you consider a jointly completely bounded bilinear form on E times F, complex valued, then there exist states F1 and F2 on A and states G1 and G2 on B such that this inequality holds for all A in E and all B in F with a constant K equal to 2 square root of 2, exactness constant of E times exactness constant of F. I'm going to remind you a little bit about exact operator spaces and how they connect with exact sister algebras. So by the same methods, namely free probability theory techniques, they were also able to show that if either A or B is an exact sister algebra and you have a jointly completely bounded bilinear form on A times B, then there exist two states, F1 and F2 on A, and two states, G1 and G2 on B, such that this inequality holds for all A in A and B in B with a constant K equal to 2 square root of 2. So now let me just remind you that an operator space is called exact if there exists a constant C greater or equal to 1 such that for every finite dimensional subspace F of E, there exists a positive integer N and the subspace G of the N by N matrices over C with the completely bounded Mazur distance from F to G less than or equal to C. And the infimum of all such constants is denoted by EX of E, and that represents the exactness constant of E. So so this exactness constant is a way of measuring the distance of finite dimensional subspaces of E to matrix algebras. And now the connection with exact sister algebras, so let me just maybe remind the definition. Of course it's very well known, but let me remind you that a sister algebra A is exact if for any short exact sequence T So take an arbitrary sister algebra B and J, a two-sided ideal in B, then when you tensor it with A in the mean tensor product, you get again short exact sequence. So. Okay, so this very important result of Kirchberg and Pizier asserts that a sister algebra is exact if and only if it is exact as an operator space. And moreover, for any exact sister algebra, the exactness constant is 1. So now you can see that this constant in here, in the case of either A and B being exact, is coming out from that. So. I'll put this here. Our main result is the following. DFS1 conjecture holds for arbitrary sister algebras A and B with constant K equals to 1, and moreover, this is the best possible constant in the conjecture of FROSM1. So I'd like to state a number of corollaries that we get out of this result. The first one is the analog of Horup's result coming out of Grothendieck's inequality for sister algebra. Namely, if A and B are sister algebras, then any completely bounded linear map P from A into the dual of B admits a factorization, this time not through a Hilbert space, but through the direct sum of a row and column Hilbert space, satisfying, moreover, this inequality. So the CB norm of R times the CB norm of S is less than or equal to 2 times the CB norm of T. Perhaps I will comment a little bit about the proof in a moment. And let me just write down another corollary. If you have a sister algebra A and T from A into PZS Hilbert space OH, so that's the analog in the category of operator spaces of Hilbert space, is a completely bounded linear map, then there exist two states, F1 and F2, on A, such that for all A in A, the norm of T of A is less than or equal to square root of 2 times the CB norm of T times this expression, F1 at A star to the 1/4, F2 at A star A to the 1/4. This result already existed in Pizier and Shlyapchenko's paper. Ours is just an improvement of constant. They had this with constant 2 to the 9/4, so just using the main result, we were able to improve on the constant. And let me just point out that this is the analog of the little Grothendieck inequality from the classical setting. Now, maybe I'll put this also here. Just to continue stating a few results that we obtain as a consequence of our main result, these are as follows. They are simply a strengthening of results from Pizier and Shlyapchenko's paper. We were just able to remove some additional assumptions that were in there. So the first one is the following. If you have an operator space such that itself and its dual embed completely isomorphically into pre-duals of Feynman algebras, then E is CB isomorphic to a quotient of a subspace of a direct sum of row plus column Hilbert space. And if, moreover, these are not just complete isomorphic subspaces, but they embed completely completely CB complemented, then you get more, namely that E is CB isomorphic to row plus column Hilbert space for some Hilbert spaces H and K. I stated this result in this way with embeddings into sister algebras just to stay as close as possible to the statement that Pizier and Shlyapchenko had in their paper. So as I said, these are just obtained by adjusting the proof of their corresponding results and making use of our main theorem, which holds in general without these additional assumptions that they had. And just to put these results in perspective, they are non-commutative analogs of the classical fact that if you have a Banach space such that both itself and its dual embed into L1 spaces, then X is isomorphic to Hilbert space. Okay, and then another corollary that can be obtained as a consequence of the main result, and again it was present in Pizien-Schlaftenko's paper, perhaps with a different constant in here, is the following, sort of a Hahn-Banach, if you wish, type theorem for jointly completely bounded bilinear forms. If you have sister algebras A and B, and you have two subalgebras, so A0 is a sister subalgebra of A, B0 is a sister subalgebra of B, and you have a jointly completely bounded bilinear form on the smaller ones, so A0 times B0, then this extends to a bilinear form on the big algebras, such that the JCB norm of the extension is controlled by the JCB norm of the original one, and I have here a factor of 2. So maybe I'll just put them up for a minute. And I think I have time to mention a few other things. So, and this will also give me a chance to comment a little bit about the proof of the corollaries, at least. So, if A and B are sister algebras, and let's denote by BIL, bilinear forms on A times B. Now, there is this lemma in the paper by Pizien-Schlaftenko, which asserts that if you have an element U, bilinear form on A times B, and you assume that this bilinear form satisfies a F-1 type of inequality, so namely such an inequality for some constant kappa and some states F1, F2 on A, respectively G1, G2 on B, then you can write out a decomposition of U as a sum of two bilinear forms on A times B, which each of which satisfies these inequalities. And I just want to point out that in the original paper of Pizien-Schlaftenko, they had such a decomposition where possibly this state in here might be different from the original ones, but then in 2006, proved that such a decomposition holds with the same states as the one you started with. So I stated it like this. Okay, so at this point I can go back for a moment before continuing and tell you that, if I find it, perhaps not. Yes, the first two corollaries are in fact a consequence of our main result together with this decomposition lemma. And then the other corollaries are a consequence of the fact that any CB map between a sister algebra and the dual of another one factors through row plus column for some Hilbert spaces. So coming back to this lemma, if you have U, a bounded bilinear form on A times B, we define norm U ER from F ROS 1 to be the infimum of all constants kappa for which this inequality here holds. Yeah? For some choice of states F1 and F2 on A, respectively G1 and G2 on B. So with this notation for this infimum of all constants, using our main result and the splitting lemma, we also showed that if you have a bilinear form on A times B, then the FS1 norm of U is less than or equal than the JCB norm of U, and that's really following from the main result. And the JCB norm of U is less than or equal than twice FS1 norm. This is a consequence of the splitting lemma. And in fact, more is true if C1 and C2 are the best constants in these inequalities, or when A and B are arbitrary sister algebras and U is any bounded bilinear form on A times B, Then very simple examples that we used show that C1 has to be 1 and C2 has to be 2. So it's this result that is responsible for the fact that not only the FS1 conjecture holds with constant 1, but that is the best possible constant that you can put in there. Okay. So I want to maybe just state a few more results, if I can find them. Yes, so the first proposition, which it's a consequence of the main theorem, together with the splitting lemma, says that if you have a bounded bilinear form on A times B, which is jointly completely bounded, then, if you remember the definition of the jointly completely bounded norm, was that the JCB norm is the smallest constant that you can put here if you take arbitrary C-star algebra C and D, but you have the mean tensor norm. So this proposition is saying that if you have a jointly completely bounded map U between A and B, or sorry, on A times B, then you have a similar inequality when on the left-hand side you take the max norm between C-star algebra C and D at the expense of changing the constant 1 in front of the JCB norm to a 2. And in fact, this is essentially the result that I'm going to tell you about next is essentially contained in PZ and Slavtenko's paper, but what it is, it's simply a characterization of maps which have the FS1 norm bounded. So let me just go back to the setting of operator spaces. If you have E and F operator spaces sitting in C-star algebras A and B, just like before, now we're going to denote by BIL of EF the set of bounded bilinear forms on E times F. Then the FS1 norm is well defined for every bounded bilinear form between E and F. If I had been more careful, I could even have found a reference for the definition of the FS1 norm. Obviously, I'm not. Somewhere underneath. We'll try. Yes? Thank you. So, just to point out that the splitting lemma, in fact, it was formulated in the setting of operator spaces, so then the FS1 norm is well defined in this setting. So by the Pizin-Slavtenko's operator space version of Grothendieck's inequality, it follows that if E and F are exact, both, then for every bilinear form between, on E times F, the FS1 norm can be expressed in this way, so it's less than or equal than 2, square root of 2, exactness constant on E, exactness constant on F, times the JCB norm of U. That's exactly the their version of the FS1 conjecture for operator spaces. So here is the result I was talking about. You have a bilinear map between operator spaces E and F. The following statements are equivalent. The FS1 norm is finite, so that means this bilinear form satisfies an FS1 type of conjecture, if and only if there exists a constant delta such that for all sister algebras C and D and the arbitrary elements in E, respectively in F, and elements in C and D, such an inequality holds with the max norm on the left, C max, tensor product and the max norm with D, and the same on the right. And of course, one can say more, that if delta of U denotes the best constant in this inequality, then you have this estimate. So in some sense, the fact that you can put max norm on the left and have such an inequality characterizes those bilinear forms which satisfy an FS1 type of inequality. And for the remaining time of my talk, I would like to talk about the proof of the Efros-Rahn conjecture, but maybe just to make a final remark on these results, ours connected to the results of PZ and Shlyapenko. So I want to point out that by our methods we cannot obtain the results, and also the fact that their version of Grothendieck inequality for jointly completely bounded maps is proved for exact operator spaces is the best that can be done for a very simple reason. So maybe I'll just give that explanation quickly. So, for example, if you take E, an operator space such that E is not isomorphic to a Hilbert space as a Banach space, and you construct this Bellinger form given by U on, I can say, ENF, maybe XY, I don't know, is maybe stick with A and B just like I've had before, is B on A star, you see, B on A. You see A comes from E and B comes from the dual of E, so it makes sense to say B on A. So this is a bounded bilinear form. If you just look at that operator U tilde that we associated, so U tilde will go from E into the dual of this, that's the double dual of E. This is actually the natural embedding gives rise, so this map gives rise to the natural embedding of E into its double dual. So what it turns out for this bilinear form is that the JCB norm of it is 1, while the Efros-Rahn norm of it is plus infinity. So this one does not satisfy an Efros-Rahn type of inequality. So exactness is a necessary condition in that statement. Okay, so now I'd like to talk about the proof of our main result. So for that I need some preliminaries on power factors and Tomita Takesaki theory. Namely, what I will need is to talk about the power factors of type 3 lambda. So if lambda is a fixed number between 0 and 1, Uffe has mentioned already this morning, the power factor of type 3 lambda with product state phi can be realized as the infinitesimal product of 2 by 2 matrices with states omega lambda. So phi is an infinite tensor product of this state, and omega lambda is a state with density H lambda being this matrix. Now, the modular automorphism group of the state phi is an infinite tensor product of these automorphisms, sigma t omega, where sigma t omega lambda acts on the 2 by 2 matrices, so for every matrix with entries xij and any real number t, the way it acts is h lambda to the power it, x h lambda to the minus it, so it's this matrix from here. So sigma t omega lambda and sigma t phi are periodic in t with minimal period given by this. Now, if m sub phi denotes the centralizer of phi, so that means all the elements of the phoneme algebra M, which are fixed by all sigma t phi for every t real number, then it was proved by Alain Kohn in 1973 that the relative commutant of the centralizer of phi in M is trivial, so it consists of scalar multiples of the identity, so this one, for me, it's the identity on M. And further, in 1989, Uffe Horup showed that for every x in the power factor M, phi x times the identity belongs to the norm closure of the convex hull of V x V star, while V goes through all unitaries on the centralizer M phi. And as a corollary, he also proved a strong version of the Dick-Smith averaging process, which says that there exists a net in the convex hull of this add V. So this is a standard notation, and it is the one I'll be using for this inner automorphism generated by V. Such that the limit, such that this net in norm converges to phi x times 1. So this is something that will be crucial for our proof. Now, perform the GNS representation for M associated to the state phi and get this triple consisting of the unitary representation, Hilbert space H phi, and a cyclic and separating vector psi phi. So H phi is the completion of M psi phi, and you can think of it as being L2 on the phonemic algebra M. By Tomita Takesaki theory, the operator S0, defined by S0 on x, x phi is equal to x star, x phi, it's closable, and its closure, denoted by S, has a unique polar decomposition, J delta to the 1/2, where J is a conjugate linear involution, and delta, this modular operator, is a positive self-adjoint unbounded operator on L2. Now, moreover, the modular automorphism group of the state phi can be expressed in terms of the modular operator by a well-known formula. And moreover, J flips M into its commutant. So JMJ is M prime, where M prime is the commutant of M. Now, following Takesaki's construction, for every N integer, set M sub N to be this spectral subspace of the modular operator. So it consists of all elements in M such that sigma t phi at x, it's lambda to the int x for every t. In his paper, Takesaki showed that this is the same as the set of all x in M such that phi of xy is equal to lambda n on phi of yx for every y in M. In particular, he obtained that M0 is the centralizer of phi. He also shows that these M sub n's are consist not just of 0, so it's different from 0. And moreover, that every eta in this Hilbert space, the closure of Mn psi phi, so every eta is an eigenvector for the modular operator with eigenvalue lambda to the n. And that these Hilbert spaces are orthogonal to each other, so you obtain a direct sum decomposition of L2 of M in this way. Now, as a consequence of this, we can show that, so it's not difficult to produce such an element Cn in M for every integer z, satisfying phi of C star n Cn is equal to lambda to the minus n over 2, and phi of Cn, Cn star, is lambda to the n over 2. And moreover, if you take the inner product in the Hilbert space H phi of Cn, J, Cn, J, psi phi, with psi phi, you get 1. Another thing which we use in our proof is the fact that injectivity is the same as semi-discreteness, as proved by Efros, Land, and Kahn. So therefore, the map that associates C times D to CD, the product CD, for, defined for C in M and D in M prime, extends uniquely to a sister algebra isomorphism between the sister algebra generated by M and M prime and the mean tensor product between M and its commutant. And this is the background that I need. So now, let's come back to our setting. I have sister algebras A and B, and they're jointly completely bounded by linear form. The first thing that we can say is that you can construct a bilinear form U hat on the mean tensor product of A and M times mean tensor product of B and M prime by this formula, and then extending it by linearity. So U hat on A tensor C, B, comma, B tensor B is U on AB times the inner product of CD psi phi with psi phi inner product in the Hilbert space H phi. And moreover, this will be a bounded bilinear form with norm of u hat less than or equal to the JCB norm of u. And the proof of that simply uses the fact that, so if we just look at it up to here, simply uses the fact that injectivity and semi-discreteness are the same. And then for the last inequality, it just uses the definition of the JCB norm. So now we have this map u hat associated to u. So now, if one applies Grothendieck inequality for sister algebra, for sister algebras to the map u hat, then one obtains the existence of states f1 hat, f2 hat on A min tensor M, then min tensor product with M, and of states g1 hat, g2 hat on B min tensor product M prime, such that this is satisfied. So this is simply Grothendieck's inequality for sister algebras applied to the bounded bilinear form u hat. At the next step, we need the following seemingly technical lemma, but it's very important to have it, which says if you take V, a unitary, in the centralizer of phi, and denote V prime, the corresponding element in the commutant M prime, so V prime is J, V, J, then you have this type of relation, so u hat on identity on A tensor add V on X, comma, identity on B tensor add V prime on Y, this is equal to u hat on X, comma, Y for all X in A min tensor M, and this should be a calligraphic M, and Y in B tensor min M prime. And so what is behind this lemma are just computations with modular operator, and basically the fact that I think V star psi phi is an eigenvector for the modular operator delta with eigenvalue 1. That's what's behind this computation. So now the next step is that based on whatever we have up to now, we can show that these states F1 hat, F2 hat, respectively G1 hat, G2 hat, can be changed into tensor product states. So this is the statement of the next proposition. So there exist states F1 and F2 on A and states G1 and G2 on B such that this inequality holds for the map u hat, so you should just compare it with the one in corollary 4. So the point is that one can replace this state f hat 1 by a state tensor product state, f1 tensor phi, f1 being a state on A, f2 hat with a state of the tensor product type, so f2 tensor phi, f2 being a state on A, and respectively for g1 hat, one can replace it with a tensor product state between a state on B and phi prime, so phi prime is going to be a state on M prime. So I'm going to tell you how to define it during the proof. It's naturally defined using this involution J and the original state phi. And same with G2 hat can be replaced by a tensor product state between a state on B and phi prime. So this is actually the main point in our proof. Okay, so I will just try to point out how the proof of this goes. First of all, it's elementary that for every two positive numbers, the square root of their product is less than or equal to their mean, arithmetic mean, alpha plus beta divided by 2. So if we use this in corollary 2, we are going to replace the square root of this product by sum at the cost of dividing by 2. That's the first step in here. Now, take V, a unitary on the centralizer M phi, and define V prime, just like in here, as JVJ. This will be an element in the commutant M prime. If you apply lemma 5 to the inequality 3, so that means that instead of working on u hat on x, y, you can replace that, so it's actually to be read backwards, you can replace that by u hat at this, and then you use the inequality in this one to the elements where you have replaced them. So this is this line here. So now comes into play the strong smear property that I've talked about. So now to the net alpha I in the convex hull of at V, where V runs through the unitary group on M phi, such that alpha I converges, so alpha I of C converges in norm to alpha, phi C times 1 for every C in M. Define this corresponding maps, alpha prime I, using J, and you see D is taken from M prime, so if I want to apply alpha I to, I can't do it on D, so I have to do it on J, D, J, so that now this becomes an element of M. So in this way, I obtain a map on M prime. Now, by convexity, one can replace at V and at V prime, since alpha I's and alpha prime I's were taken from the convex hull of those. One can replace at V and at V prime by alpha I and alpha prime I to obtain such an inequality. So you just should compare this to that. And pass to the limit to obtain this inequality, where Fi will be a state on A defined by Fi on A is F hat I on A tensor 1. Gi is a state on B obtained by saying Gi is G hat I on B tensor 1. This one here is the identity on N prime. And the state phi prime that one puts in here, it's defined in terms of the state phi, namely you take, so phi prime at an element on M prime, the commutant of M, is phi on J, D, J, and then conjugate of that. Now, this inequality here holds for arbitrary X and Y. So we may as well substitute x by t to the 1/2 x, square root of t times x, and substitute y by t to the minus square root 1/2, t to the minus square root of 2 times y. I'm not saying it right. T to the minus 1/2 y for an arbitrary t positive, and what you obtain is just this. And now use another elementary fact that if you take infimum over all t greater than 0 of t alpha plus 1 over t times beta, you get 2 square root of alpha beta. So take the infimum over t in this expression on the right, what we will get is exactly a statement in proposition 6. And the last ingredient in the proof is some other thing from calculus, namely for every two positive numbers, alpha and beta, if you take infimum over all integers of the expression lambda lambda to the n times alpha plus, I think that says lambda to the minus n times beta, it should say, it's less than or equal to square root of lambda plus square root of 1 over lambda times square root of alpha beta. This is something that we will need later. So now we have everything ready to prove the FS1 conjecture, and here it goes. So for take a lambda strictly between 0 and 1 and consider the associated power factors of type 3 lambda with product state phi as before. Denote C of lambda to be this constant square root of lambda to the 1/2 plus lambda to the minus 1/2 divided by 2. You take U, jointly completely bounded by linear form on sister algebras A and B. Proposition 6 provides us with states F1, F2 on A, G1, G2 on B, satisfying proposition 6, not there anymore. That is such that the associated map U hat to U, remember that map, satisfies that inequality. Now we will prove that with this choice of states F1 and F2 on A, G1 and G2 on B, the map U satisfies this inequality. So this is an FS1 type of inequality in which the constant that appears in front is C of lambda. So in other words, we show that the FS1 conjecture holds with constant C of lambda. And since this constant C of lambda goes to 1, as lambda goes to 1, a simple compactness argument shows that the conjecture also holds with constant 1 instead of C of lambda. So now, we are going to prove that this inequality 7 holds. Take n, an integer, and choose this element Cn of m as in corollary 2. So I'm just repeating here what the conditions are. Phi on C star n Cn, it's lambda to the minus n divided by 2. Phi on Cn Cn star, it's lambda to the n divided by 2. And moreover, if you take the inner product in the Hilbert space H phi of Cn j Cn j psi phi with psi phi, you get 1. So now, in here, I'm just using the definition of the map you had. So you had on, for every A in A and B in B, you had on A tensor Cn, comma, B tensor J Cn J. This is now an element in M prime. This is equal by the definition of the map you had with U on A comma B times this inner product here. But this inner product is 1. So I'm only getting U on AB. Now, I'm going to like to keep proposition 6 and the last steps as well. No, that's not good. Maybe you will simply believe me that the statement of proposition 6 is the one I'm writing now. So the first thing I'm just writing is copying that inequality on the left, but just putting absolute value and squaring. So I'm just copying the fact that this term is equal to this, put absolute values and take squares. So now maybe I can remove this slide and put back proposition 6, that I am applying with this element as in there. So on A tensor Cn, B tensor J, Cn J, I'm just using proposition 6. So this is what we get. And now what we do next is simply to remember that phi Cn Cn star is equal to lambda to the n half, and phi Cn star Cn is lambda to the minus n half, and replace it there. The next step is to just factor out, so perform this multiplication. So lambda to the n half, f1 on a star, simply multiplied with this, it will cancel the lambda, so you have the first term, f1 a star, g1 b star b. So if you do all these multiplications, you get four terms, which are exactly these ones. And now, since lambda to the 1 half plus lambda to the minus 1 half, by our notation of the constant C lambda, gives twice C lambda squared, here is where lemma 7 that I announced and never used gets to be used for the first time. So lemma 7 says that this expression, lambda to the 1 half, lambda to the minus 1 half times square root of alpha beta, majorizes that infimum. So we can use lemma 7 to obtain this inequality in here. Remember that 2 C lambda squared is equal to this expression. And now remember that C lambda is greater than 1. So in fact, I can insert it everywhere and pull it out. So this is less than or equal to this expression here. And now simply take square root to obtain the inequality which we wanted, namely the fact that the Efrosh-Rahn conjecture holds with constant C lambda. And by the argument that I said over there, it also holds with constant 1. And that's the end of the proof. Thank you.